probably an overstatement to call it one of my favourite pieces of celluloid, but I must confess that I have always had something of a soft spot for Monty Python's The Life of Brian. Now, I know that this is a controversial film for some people because they think of it as being mocking of or disrespectful to religion generally or Christian faith in particular. But I think that that's a slightly unwarranted view of the film, notwithstanding the irony that people who profess not to be people of faith often have a propensity for telling those of us who are how we should behave and conduct ourselves. But then we're probably just reaping our own reward because we tend to do the same to them. But on the contrary, I think The Life of Brian, aside from the various funny one-liners and hilarious scenes, is actually, if you take the time to look at it, a film that makes some important points. And it makes these points quite often while we're not looking at them or looking for them. And if I may be so bold, in that respect at least, it does bear some similarity to Scripture. Don't stone me. Because what is often most important is often what we fail to take notice of. One of these things is the fact that one of the criticisms levelled at the film was that it makes fun of religion. And people who make this criticism often forget that there's a lot of humour and satire in Scripture. And today's reading from the Gospel according to John is a case in point. It is a hugely satirical passage that sits within a broader satirical passage in John. Because in The Life of Brian, Pontius Pilate was portrayed as a rather foppish, ineffectual windbag. And John actually portrays Pilate in very similar terms. We have this absurd situation where the Jewish leaders, having brought Jesus to Pilate to accuse him of treason and rebellion, remain outside the governor's palace, the Praetorium, because the Sabbath is coming and they don't want to make themselves ritually impure. And Pilate, who is the governor, who is supposed to be the authoritarian ruler of this province on behalf of the Roman Emperor, he is forced to be in a position where he has to constantly shuffle backwards and forwards between Jesus and his accusers who are standing outside. So you've got this rather ridiculous image of Pilate haplessly running backwards and forwards. He doesn't even have the brains to send messengers to convey the messages. He does the running around himself. And so John is immediately parodying secular power. He is immediately parodying those institutions and assumptions about what power is and what power looks like. Because in the figure of power, Pilate, who represents the emperor, we have this somewhat hapless individual running around, a bit like Chicken Little. And so John is satirizing imperial power. But John is also satirizing Jesus' accusers in the religious establishment. Because even as he's running backwards and forward, Pilate is somewhat like an early version of Yes Minister. This parody, this satire of the political process of the day. And poor old Pilate, he doesn't get any further with Jesus. Because in today's reading we have this exchange between Pilate and Jesus in which Jesus is continually providing these obscure, abstruse answers to Pilate's direct question. It's a reminder of that episode of Yes Minister where Hacker says to Sir Humphrey, "Are you going to give me a straight answer to a straight question?" And Humphrey says, "Well, yes and no." Pilate asked Jesus a series of fairly direct questions. Are you the king? Are you the king of the Jews? And every time Jesus turns the question back on him, it's you who say this. Do you say this, or do those who accuse me say this? And in part this is a defensive strategy. Jesus is not going to legitimize the process, this abusive process, by giving his accusers any kind of excuse to say, aha, you are disloyal, you are planning a rebellion. So Jesus is being very canny here. But beyond this, the broader point is that Pilate is talking at complete cross purposes with Jesus because Pilate doesn't understand exactly what it is that Jesus is talking about, of what his kingship involves, of what his relationship with his followers involves, of the kind of revolution of which he is the progenitor. Indeed, just like Jesus, accusers don't understand because they're worried that Jesus is going to supplant their leadership over the Jewish people. Because what Jesus is saying is that his kingship, his power, his sovereignty belongs not in the world of politics, not in our cultural assumptions of where power is and what it looks like, but in the capacity of God to change our world view, to so revolutionize our hearts that life becomes a different thing from what it was before. That we are renewed it is in Jesus' very helplessness before the powers of the empire, before the power of his accusers. It is in his very vulnerability